Levi Taro?
You're on.
Okay. So since we're approaching Shavuos, I thought that maybe we would do one or two topics before Shavuos that touch on the Aseres Adibros, some interaction between the Aseres Adibros, the world of Bezdin, and Choshen Mishpat. So the last of the Aseres Adibros is Lo Sachmod. Lo Sachmod Beis Reyecha, Lo Sachmod Eishes Reyecha, Ve'odoba Amoso, V'shavo V'chamavo, V'chol Asher the Reyecha, that you're not allowed to covet. This prohibition is in the section of the Dibros that relates to the Mitzvos Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. As you know, the first five of the Dibros are Bein Adam L'Malkum, the second five are Bein Adam L'Chaveiro. But the Bein Adam L'Chaveiro are a mixture of things that are not necessarily monetary per se, but are nonetheless offenses that you commit against your fellow man, like lo sina, adultery, having relations with somebody else's wife. And then there's lo signo, which is stealing. So that's clearly in the realm of what would be, even though we say it's begonim nefashos, it's talking about kidnapping, but it's still clearly that you're causing some type of a restraint on a person's liberty. That's another type of offense. But you're not allowed to bear false testimony that would prevent a person from receiving money that they might otherwise be entitled to. You can't kill somebody. Then we have losachmod. The last one is you can't covet, which penetrates both the monetary sphere and a person's personal space as well, because we refer to not coveting a person's wife, which is their personal space, and also not coveting their monetary possessions. We have the Abdo, Bamaso, Bishoro, Bachamoro, Bachol, Asher, the Reyecha. This seems to be a very important commandment because it's included within the Big Ten, so to speak, the Aseres Adibros. And the Midrashim say that it appears last, almost as an Acharon Acharon Chaviv, in order to give us a remez that if you violate Lo Sachmod, then it's considered as if you've been over on all of the Aseres Adibros, according to one Medrash. The Medrash goes on to say that if you fulfill Lo Sachmod properly, that you don't violate this mitzvah, then it's as if you've Kiyam Kula Torah Kula, like you fulfill the entire Torah. So what's so special and important about Lo Sachmod? So the Rabbeinu Bachya in the Kata Kemach says that it corresponds really to the first of the Aseres Adibros, that there's one approach to say number 10 corresponds to number 1, and number 9 corresponds to number 2. So number 1 is the fundamental essence of our faith, that we believe in God. Lo Sachmod, if you're going to covet somebody else's possessions, so that indicates a lack of belief in God, a lack of bitachon, that what you have is what you're supposed to have, and that what somebody else has is what they're supposed to have. So you don't have the full bitachon, a full faith in the B'misha Amar Anochi, in the one who declared Anochi, that I am your God. Because if you recognize that the whole world is governed by God and that He's calling all the shots and that you trust in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, lo hayachom klal, then you wouldn't have any coveting, you wouldn't have any temptations for somebody else's property, because you'd recognize that you have everything that that you're supposed to have. It's like the statement that we learned in Pirkei Avos, in Perek Dalet, Eizu Ashir Asamech Bechelko. Everyone wants to be rich. It's very easy to be rich. You don't need to go out and make millions and millions of dollars. All you have to do is be happy with what you have. So shouldn't everybody just fulfill this? Because this way it's so easy to be rich. It's just like the Wizard of Oz, with all the Dorothy had to say, is kick the heels and say, there's no place like home. What you got to do is say, there's no place like my home, that I have everything that I need in the world. So the answer is, of course, that everybody says, of course, I'm prepared to be samech b'chelki, I'm just waiting to get my chelik. As soon as I get my chelik, so then I'll be samech in it. So the idea is, no, you're supposed to recognize that what you have right now is the chelik that you're supposed to have, and you're already supposed to be samech. So this is very interesting, though, because Lo Sachmod indicates that there is a violation. Normally, when we speak about the violations of the Torah, they're not violated by machshava alone. Avodah Zarah may be an exception that you can violate with a machshavas avodah zarah, But generally speaking, in order to commit an offense, you have to commit some sort of a maisa. And here it says lo sachmot. So to what degree do we say that you have violated it with your simple thought process alone? And if you look in Sefer Devarim, where the Aseres Hadibros is repeated, so then we have an additional lav, lo sachmot eishes reyecha, not only is there a commandment of lo sachmon that you can't covet, but there's also a commandment of lo sisabe that you can't desire that which belongs to your fellow. So both of these appear to be offenses that you violate with your makshav alone. So there's a famous Ibn Ezra asks the question on the pasuk in Parshas Yisro. He says, how can a person really control their thought process? Anashim rabim yismal zosa mitzvah. Ef yadam shol yakma dava yafe belibo komashu nekba demari enav. If a person sees something nice, how can you control yourself from wanting it? You can perhaps restrain yourself from taking an action based on what you desire, but how can you stop yourself from just having a natural thought process of having a desire for something? So the Ibn Ezra answers, classical answer, he says that just like if you would have a poor villager who lives in a kingdom and there's a beautiful princess, so outside of reading fairy tales, he knows that the princess is completely off limits to him. If he sees the princess walking in the street with a giant royal procession, he's not going to think to himself, oh, I'm desiring that princess for myself, that I'm going to marry her someday, because he knows that there's not a chance. So he's not going to covet her because she's so completely off limits to him. He might admire her, but he's not going to covet her for himself because that's just a ridiculous proposition. He compares it, nowadays, we live in a more egalitarian age. It's not necessarily so off limits for even a commoner to think that maybe they'll be able to marry with royalty. But he gives another example that I think people can more easily relate to. He says, Kasher, this is similar to, Ein adam misabe lishkavi mimo. That a person does not desire to have intimate relations with his mother, apa pishi yape, even though his mother might be very beautiful. Because he knows from a very young age that his mother is prohibited to him and that she's off limits and that her function in life is not to be his wife but to be his mother, so therefore he's not going to covet her. So he says that the same idea should pertain. That's what the Torah is legislating. It's possible to legislate a thought process that we're supposed to have the same thought process, that just like a mother is off limits, so too a possession which is in somebody else's domain is similarly off limits, just like one's mother, that it shouldn't even enter into one's thought process. What's interesting in this whole discussion of the Ibn Ezra is that this is his explanation of the prohibition of lo sachmot, as well as the prohibition of lo sisabe. The Ibn Ezra understands that there would be a violation with one's thought process alone, and the Torah is legislating one's thoughts. At least in this domain, the Ibn Ezra says that you should be able to gain control of your thoughts. It's reasonable, appropriate for the Torah to require a certain outlook, a certain thought process from us, and that this is one of the cornerstones of our faith, or one of the tenets of the Aseres HaDibros. Now, not everybody agrees that in order to violate these commandments, that you can violate them with the thought process alone. There is a Samag, and also there's a Bach and Simon Shinai and Aleph of Kosh Mishpat, which both seem to be of the opinion that, yes, the violation, the prohibition, begins with the thought process, but ultimately it's violated when you take measures to bring this thing that you want into your possession. When you bring it into your possession, so then you violated the prohibition of not coveting and not desiring, because you have actually taken measures. You've taken tangible measures to bring the item into your possession. That's a third approach. And la halacha, we really follow a compromise approach. If you look in the Rambam, in Perek Aleph, in Hilchos Gezeila, you look in the Shulchan Aruch, which is in, there is the Shulchan Aruch, Simon, Hilchos Gezeila, Simon Shin Nantes, that speaks about the practical implications of the violation of Los Achmon and Los Isabe. So they both say that Los Achmon is only violated when one actually brings the item into their possession. I coveted a very expensive gold watch that you had, and I managed to bring it into my possession. I managed to get you to transfer it to me somehow. So then I have violated Los Achmon as soon as it comes into my possession. Los Isabe, how on the other hand, is just an act of desiring. Los Isabe, as long as I have plotted out some type of a thought process in my head, that I have thought to myself various machinations that are going to bring something into my possession, whether it's your wife, or whether it's your car, or whether it's your house. I figured the whole thing out. Even if I don't bring it to fruition, even if it is not materialized, I have violated Los Isabe. So that seems to be the compromise approach.
So why do you need both?
Why
not just have Los Isabe? Because you're going to hit that first.
If you bring the item into your possession, so that's worse. So now you violated two aveiros. You violate two aveiros. The Sama has some sort of an approach that sometimes you can violate one and not violating the other. If it's not a very complicated thought process, so maybe you go straight to Lo Sachmot. And if it is a very complicated thought process, but it's something which is so far beyond your possession that there's no chance that you'll ever get it, so then you would violate Lo Sisabe, not Lo Sachmot. So there are different theories and explanations regarding that question.
Lo Sisabe seems to have a general, like anything that possesses. You're not going to be able to do Lo Sachmot of its entire house.
Any of these things.
An awful
it could be any
so,
of these things.
So to
any
convert
of these
all
things
that
alone,
into Lo Sachmot would take a massive effort.
Well, it's each thing alone would be Lo Sachmot. Right. It doesn't. You have to do. It's not a. It doesn't require that you to violate the coveting of every single item in the set. Each one is individually would trigger the prohibition. So the Rambam says something very interesting. So the Rambam in Hilchos Gezeila says that you could take a look at the Rambam in Halacha Tes. It's on the bottom of page 2 over here. So the Rambam says that look at the third line with respect to Lo Sachmot. He says that even though you've given a lot of money for the item, you still violate Lo Sachmot. Because you've given a person a really hard time, the person didn't want to sell an item, and you but you pressured him and intimidated him and cajoled him and wheedled him until finally he agreed to sell you the item. Even though you gave him the fair market value of the item, maybe you gave him more than the fair market value of the item, you gave him a very good deal. He says you don't get malchus for this law because it doesn't have a maser. So wait a second, but the Rambam just said that you violate the law when you receive the item in your possession. So you have actually caused the owner to transfer the item into your possession. So shouldn't that be a law she'esh bo maser? Why is he calling that a law she'ein bo maser? So the Ravid calls out the Rambam on that question. You look on the next page. The second of Sagas Haravid, where the Rambam says, "In lokin alav zeh she'ein bo maser." So he says, "Lo risi davar tama gadol mizeh, davar tama gadol mizeh." This is the astonishing statement of the Rambam. "Behekon maser gadol netila sachepetz." That clearly, since you only violate Lo Sachmot if you receive the object, it's one thing to say that Lo Sisabe is alav she'ein bo maser, but to say that Lo Sachmot is alav she'ein bo maser, avahayu loma mnei shu chayav b'tashlumin. The Rambam should have said that the reason why he would be obligated is because he's chayav b'tashlumin. Now, where did this come from? What do you mean he's chayav b'tashlumin? So the Ravid is assuming that when Lo Sachmot is violated, even though you've paid money for the object, since the owner didn't really want to part with the object, so then you're required to return the object to the owner. And that's why you shouldn't get malchus, because we have a different remedy, right? It's nitan lehishavon, or it's nitan letashlumin, that I have to reimburse the owner for the item that I wrongfully pressured him to transfer to my possession, despite the fact that I paid good money for it. So Magi Mishnah points out that this kasha that the Ravid asks on the Rambam is premised upon a totally different understanding of what causes the violation of Lo Sachmot. And for this, we have to go back to the Gemara. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia and Dafei Amud Beis, this is Source Dalit, says it's trying. The Gemara there is discussing Do we say that if somebody is chashed on mamona, that a person is not trusted when it comes to money, that they're not trusted that they wouldn't take somebody else's money, that they would be chashed ashvuasa, that they would also be chashed that we couldn't trust them to take a shvuah? So the Gemara, what it was trying to bring a raya that, oh, we see somebody's not trusted when it comes to money, but we would still rely upon them to take a shvuah, because we have the case of a shomer who, let's say that he could get out of, it was a shomer chinam, and he could just take the item was stolen, he could take a shvuah that really he wouldn't be chayev, right, because he was only a shomer chinam. As long as he takes a shvuah that he wasn't poshea, he wasn't shaleach yad, but he says, I don't want to take a shvuah, I'd rather pay the money. So Apuna comes along and he says, well, we're going to make him take a different shvuah. We're going to make him take the shvuah she'ena b'shuso. He should take a shvuah that is no longer in his possession, because we're worried that maybe he's willing to pay the money, because this is a way for him to buy and purchase an item that the owner wouldn't have otherwise sold. The owner was willing to was prepared to deposit the item with this person, but the Bailey, who has the item in his possession, knows that eventually you have to give it back to the owner, but he wants to keep it forever. He's willing to pay the owner, but the owner wouldn't want it back, wouldn't be prepared to sell it to him. So this is a very clever way for him to take the item and pay for it without the owner necessarily agreeing to sell it to him. So we say, so let him, you know, take a shvuah. So the Gemara says that, no, that's a special case, because there he's more heter. Hasam nami more v'yomer dami ker yahav nalei. He says, well, since I'm paying money for it, so he doesn't really think that he is violating anything, because he figures since he's paying for the object, so he doesn't mean to be dishonest. Since he doesn't mean to be dishonest, so in his particular case, we'll trust him when it comes to a shvua. It doesn't mean that in general, when somebody's chashed on mamona, that they're not chashed on shvua. So the Gemara then asks the kasha. So amalei ravachem yidifti l'rabinim, akaba lav lo sachmon. But wait a second, but then he's violating the law of lo sachmon. He's violating the law of lo sachmon, so he should be puzzled anyway, that we shouldn't allow him to take a shvuah. So the Gemara answers, no, lo sachmon the inshib lo demei mashmelahu, that the violation of lo sachmon, people think that you only would violate it if you didn't pay money. But if you actually paid money to the person who owned the object, we're not talking about paying money that he's going to sell you his wife. We're talking about you paying money with respect to the other objects that he's going to transfer to you. People think that there's no violation. So therefore, even though this question, what is the therefore? You could say therefore one of two things. Therefore, even though he's really violated lo sachmon, since he doesn't know any better, so he's not considered to be a pasul in terms of being pasul l'shvua. Or we could say maybe he's right. Maybe when the Gemara says lo sachmon din shivlo demei mashmelu, it's mashmelu to people that lo sachmon applies to only when you haven't handed over money. So maybe the people get it right. We always assume that people's assumptions are incorrect. We have a general dismay as a principle that if you have, like in Amaretz, people are not, you know, tamidei chachamim, so it's hipuch das Torah. That every time they assume something is exactly the opposite of the Torah. But maybe this time they got it right. Maybe their assumption is correct. The really lo sachmon is only violated if you didn't hand over the money. So Tosfos in Sanhedrin and Daf Kopeyim at base, I have the Gemara here, not the Tosfos, but Tosfos in Sanhedrin, it's reflected by what Tosfos says in the beginning of in Baba Metzia and Ahmed Beis, and the Tosfos Dibo Maska below Deme suggests in one Tosfos has a couple of approaches here. In the Tosfos's first approach, Tosfos suggests that maybe people think that lo sachmon does not apply when money is given over, and you know what? They're correct. Lo sachmon doesn't apply in that particular case. Because if money is given over, so then you've given the owner the fair market value of his possession, and therefore you haven't violated lo sachmon altogether. That's one answer that Tosfos gives. Then Tosfos gives another approach. He says that it could be, if you hand over money there really could be a violation of lo sachmon, but it depends. Remember, we have a sugya in the Gemara about Tayu v'zovin zvinei zvin. That if I force a person against the wall, I pull out a gun on him and I say, I want you to sell me your car, and he sells me the car, but I give him money for the car, so we say that the sale is a valid sale. Right? That's Tayu v'zovin. So it's the Gemara on Daf, and Baba Kama, on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. This is the top of page 2. Which Rav Avraham Rav Avia asked Rav Ashi a question. He said, "Ma ben gazlan lechamsin? we talk about different psulim. In the Sanhedrin, for example, there's the Gazlanim and there are the Chamsanim. The psulim are both psulim le'edus. So what's the difference between a Gazlan and a Chamsan? So Amalei Chamsan Yoiv Dami. The Chamsan gives money. It sounds like the Chamsan is in the category of this person who's giving over money, and maybe he's violating Lo Sachmod by giving over money. Certainly according to the Rambam says you give over money, the owner didn't really want to sell it, so that's a violation of Lo Sachmod, right? So Gazlan Lo Yoiv Dami. But a Gazlan, you take somebody's possession and you don't give him money. So Amalei Yoiv Dami, Chamsan Kari Slay. So Rav Avya responded to Rav Ashi. He said, how is he a chamsan if he's giving money? Sounds like a good guy. He said that even if you force somebody to sell something, if he sells it, the sale is still considered to be a valid sale. So he answers the Gemara, Bakasha Hadam Marotze Ani Hadalom Marotze Ani. The Gemara distinguishes between whether the seller, when he gave it to him, he said, Rotze Ani? That, okay, fine, you put me against the wall, you forced me to sell my car, but now that you're giving me money, you know what? I'm happy about it. I'm okay with it. Rotze Ani, I'm good with it. In the end, all is fine, all is good. It's like when you compel a husband to give a gift, so it has to be given his own free will. So if he says, Rotze Ani, so you've turned the trigger on him, or you've threatened to break his legs, and now he says, Rotze Ani, so all is fine and good. So it shows that he's doing it of his own free will. So too over here, he says, Rotze Ani, so he's doing it of his own free will. But if he didn't say Rotze Ani, so then that doesn't count. So it comes along Tosus and says, so maybe we can say the same thing with respect to Lo Sachmon. We can say like this. We can say that if the seller sold the item, he received money for the item, if he said Rotze Ani, so then there's no violation. In such a case, there would be no violation in fact. However, when is it that there is a violation? There's a violation when the person did not say Rotze Ani. If he didn't say Rotze Ani, then there would not be a violation. So if you take a look in the Rambam does not seem to distinguish between whether the seller said Rotze Ani or whether the seller didn't say Rotze Ani, right? The Rambam just said that money. He violates Lo Sachmod either way. So it seems according to the Rambam, you're always going to violate Lo Sachmod. So the Raavad throws in a second question. So the Raavad, this is the first of the Hasagas Raavad on top of page 3. Raavad says, he quotes the Rambam, he says, wait a second. The only time that there's going to be a violation, says the Raavad, is when the owner did not say Rotze Ani. But if the owner said Rotze Ani, so then there should be no violation. Comes along the Magid Mishnah, that source Yud over here, and the Magid Mishnah says, these two comments of the Raavad are the Shitoso of the Raavad, and the two Kashis of the that the Raavad has on the Rambam really answer each other in terms of understanding the Shita of the Rambam over here. It says that according to the Raavad, you've only violated Lo Sachmod in the event, now let's say you didn't give money at all. So Raavad would say, if you didn't give money at all, so then you can't say that that was the first teres of Tosus. What is a violation of Lo Sachmod if you didn't give money at all? What's the obvious kasha on that teres? The obvious kasha on that teres is, well, that's the same thing as Gezela. Gezela is when I take an object without giving money. So what would be the difference between Lo Sachmod and Lo Sigzo? So that's why Tosus came up with this very creative answer. That was the Tosfos on and Bubba. First line, the Tosfos and Bava Metzia, Ham and Bay, source A, then tell him, tape a claim of Lo Sigzo. Say that the person is violent Lo Sigzo. Why does the Gemara say he's violent Lo Sachmod? Yesham Alavo Labishne Labin. That it's the buy that the person didn't give money, and they coveted the item, and they took the item without paying money for it, so they violated two things. They violated Lo Sigzo, they violated Lo Sachmod. But it's Hainu Ap, it's basically the same sort of thing. So the Raavad says, okay, I agree the money is given over, but he's like the second teres of the Tosos in Sanhedrin. Money's given over, but the owner didn't say Rotze Ani, meaning that the sale is not fundamentally a good transaction. If the sale would be a valid transaction, says the Raavad, there would be no violation of Lo Sachmod. Lo Sachmod requires a Maise. It requires that the object be handed over. However, it also requires that the transaction not be valid. That explains why the Raavad says, oh, so I can explain to you why there's no Malkus. There's no Malkus because the purchaser has to give the item back. since it wasn't a valid transaction, this is a Tayuv Izavin case where the owner didn't say Rotsa'ani, so the object is going to have to be given back. But if it would be a perfectly valid transaction, so in such a case, the item wouldn't have to be returned, and therefore, you know, says the Ravid that there would be no violation of Losach mode. So explains the Magen Mishnah, the Rambam disagrees on all counts. The Rambam holds that the violation of Losach mode is even when the sale is a completely valid sale. Even when the sale is a completely valid sale. In fact, this whole, the Eben HaOzel points out, this whole distinction between Rotsa'ani and not Rotsa'ani, according to the Rambam, probably doesn't exist. We don't find that the Rambam, in the case of Toyu Bizoven, requires that there be a statement of Rotsa'ani in order for the sale to be valid. That's a side point. But according to the Rambam, even if that would be the case, that you would have to say Rotsa'ani, the Rambam would say that even in the event that the seller said Rotsa'ani, given that he did not really want to sell the object, it doesn't matter that the sale is a valid sale. There's still a violation of Losach mode. So therefore, the Rambam couldn't say that the reason why there would be no Malkus Losach mode is because the purchaser has to return the item. The purchaser doesn't have to return the item. The sale is a perfectly valid sale. There's no violation in the sale itself. What then is the violation? It's a lav she'ein b'maaseh. The violation is in the thought process. The violation was in the coveting, in the planning process for the purchaser to convince the seller to sell him the item, even though the seller didn't want to sell him the item. And that thought process is a lav she'ein bo ma'aseh. The actual selling process has a ma'aseh, but there's nothing wrong with the selling process. The selling process is a perfectly valid selling process. It could even be a case, as the Ravid pointed out, it could even be a case, according to the Rambam, where the person, where the seller said, Rotsa'ani. According to all the deos, it would be a valid sale. Where the seller said, Rotsa'ani. Nonetheless, according to the Rambam, despite the fact that the sale is going to be a valid sale, there still is the commission of the Aveira of Losach mode. Because what ultimately is the source of the violation of Losach mode? The source is not the Maisa altogether, but rather the Machshava. And that's what the Magen Mishnah pretty much says, Beferish, if you take a look at the second paragraph of the Magen Mishnah, beginning with the second line, about six lines before the end of the line here, about Das Rabbeinu Zal, She Isser Aparosan Amocheru, that the Isser is even if at the end of the day the seller is perfectly happy to sell the item, Balkein Kosov She'em Bo Maiseh, why is it so? That's why the Rambam says the lav itself is a lav She'em Bo Maiseh, the Fishin Atila Sachevis Barotzen Amocheru Naseh. Because taking the item, the mocher at the end is okay about selling the item. What is the isser? It was the efforts that were taken, what was not a maise itself, the planning process and the pressuring process that took place on the part of the purchaser. Who I isser? That's what the isser is. V'nigma b'gmara b'shasa mekach. And it's just completed at the time of the transaction. And in somebody's efforts and trying and their machinations and planning to convince the seller to sell, that's not considered to be a maaseh. There's no transaction there. That's why the Rambam didn't give the reason for the fact that there's no malchus in it being nitan l'tashlumin. Because there is no chiyuv hashavah. The object never has to be returned. There's still a violation of losach mode. The Stipel Gaon, in his commentary to the Torah, in Parshas Yisro, so Stipel Gaon explains in sort of a lumdisha fashion what is the idea of how we're explaining the Rambam, that the issa of losach mode is an issa which is violated with makshava alone. But why then does the Rambam say that you only violate the issa when you actually receive the object, when the object is actually transferred from the seller to the purchaser? So he explains, because that's a shear in the chimud, that there is a measurement of chimud that has to be satisfied in order to show that this is the requisite level of chimud for which one would be liable. And that shear is only reached when you actually obtain the item. If you didn't obtain the item, then you didn't covet enough. that the proof of that you really coveted it fully is that you received the item in your possession. And so that's what the answer. It's a tanai. He uses two different lashonas. One lashon he uses is that it's a shir in the chimud, and the other lashon that he uses is that it's a tanai in the chimud. That it's a condition of how can we define that this is the requisite chimud, that you've had the requisite thought process. It's been a concrete enough thought process to make you chayev. The fact that you've managed to bring it into your possession.
Even if you went out of his way to try to get it and didn't succeed, that wouldn't...
Then obviously you didn't try hard enough. You know?
And
obviously you didn't try hard enough. You know, it's like my grandfather used to say to me, you know, like my grandfather was an uncompromising Russian, which means, you know, like there was no room for, you know, any kind of leniency if you failed in something. It wasn't like, oh, nice try. It didn't work that way. So, you know, the expression that it doesn't matter whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. So my grandfather would say, yeah, that's true, but if you lost, then obviously you didn't play the game very well. So it's the same idea over here, which is that if you didn't manage to bring the object into your possession, so you didn't covet strongly enough. That's a good thing. So then you didn't violate the Yisr, but this is a way of being able to calculate the shear of the Yisr. Others, with Chaim Moser, others also bring a similar explanation. Stipe Lagom, you know, happens to say it very, very nicely and clearly, but you find this Mahalik elsewhere, and it's really, if you look carefully at the words of the Magen Mishnah, it's essentially the Mahalik of the Magen Mishnah as well.
Then what we said before, then you'd be over on Lo Sisava in that case.
So Lo Sisava is also interesting, because the Magen Mishnah makes a comment within the Ravid to say that Lo Sisava is also only violated in the event that the person really figures out a very involved path and route and scheme in order to extract the item in a wrongful fashion from the other person. So in the Sefer of Brachos, which is was authored by the Ben Ish Chai, he talks about some of the inyanim in that Sefer of Lo Sachmon. So he says that from the Magen Mishnah's comments explaining the Ravid, we could say the same thing really with respect to the Rambam. Because if you look at the Lashon of the Rambam, let's find it over here. So the Rambam says in Halakha Yud, when he's explaining the law of lo sisave, says kol misave beso ishto vekelav shel chaveru chukayotzim mishar dvarim sheefshal iknosan mimenu. It has to be all the items that are listed outside of one's isha. The items are shor v'chamoro that normally could be potentially up for sale. It's just in this particular case, it's not up for sale. Kiban shekasha belibo. So says the Rambam, as long as you thought in your mind that you want it, so you violated the Yisr. But points out the Rav Brachos, he doesn't stop there. He has more words after shekasha belibo. Because he says that, again, going back to our initial question that we started with, we don't find in the Torah that you generally can be over in Issa with Makshava alone. In fact, we have a general principle, saying, Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mitzarif Makshava Ra'a L'Maisa, that a person has a Makshava, they don't act upon it, they're generally not liable for it, right? Okay, right, exactly. What?
We find thought possible. Is not Chichbul Avacha, that's also Makshava alone, right?
But it's also in this. But it manifests itself in the way that you act towards your fellow, the way that you give tochakot in improper fashion. He says that in every single case, we find that we're not going to give punishment based on makshav alone. It has to manifest itself in a particular way in terms of how you act towards the other person. He brings raios for this as a general rule. He points out that sometimes you can have an exception with respect to avodah zarah, or where your makshav is osepri, where there is some type of fruit that is born from your thought process, but not if you don't have fruit that's born from your with your thought process. Or maybe in a case we are over vishonet, then we are less charitable towards your machshavos if you already become regulated in doing an avera. So there are certain exceptions to the rule, but he says it's a general rule. we don't find that we're going to hold you liable for makshava. So here he says, this explains why the Rambam really points out that it's more than just a simple thought process. It's shechashav libo hech yichne davar zeh unefate libo bedavar, that you are thinking to yourself, what is the scheme that I will generate in order to be able to convince and cajole this fellow to sell me his chepetz? It has to be an elaborate thought process. So even for those tisabe, it's not just one thought. It's an elaborate thought process that you think to yourself, I'm going to say this, he's going to say that. You think it out like a chess game. I'm going to say this, he's going to say that. I'm going to do this, he's going to do that. And you figure out the whole thing. So only then have you violated los tisabe. If it's a thought, if it's a passing thought in your head, you're passing somebody, I mean, even this, you should try to avoid, the post can point out, but you're passing somebody's house and you're thinking, oh, that's such a nice house, I want to have it. So you haven't violated the law of los tisabe at that point in time. If you stop and you think, ah, I really like that house, let me think of how we should go about this. I'm going to knock on his door and I'm going to say that I'm going to offer you a lot of money and I'm going to give you all cash, and I'm going to take your house right away. So once you already formulate that very lengthy thought process, so that's when you violated the law. Now, of course, this is all, as we said, in both the Rambam and the Ravid, the violation is only when the person doesn't want to sell it. So it has to be, you know, the person doesn't want to sell it. But if you have a thought process, oh, I'm going to approach the person and say, how much is that doggy in the window? And if the person says, or the gorilla in the window, whatever, and the person says it's not for sale, then I'm not going to go any further. So that's fine. That's a legitimate thought process.
But you can't give higher price. It's only $1 million.
Right. No,
house.
It's only illegitimate. That's right. It's illegitimate if the person indicates that they really don't want to sell it. The person indicates they want to sell it, and you're thinking to yourself, oh, when he says he doesn't want to sell it, then
price.
I'm going to up the price, or I'm going to, you know, make him an offer that he can't refuse, right. So to speak. So then that is a violation. He goes further and he says that, let's say I'm an Adam Chashuv. If I'm an Adam Chashuv, so I go to a person and I say, oh, I'd like to buy this item, and I figure that, okay, if he says it's not for sale, I won't pursue it any further. So says the Ben Ish Chai that if you're an Adam Chashuv, it could be that even asking is going to be a violation, because nobody's going to want to turn down an Adam Chashuv. It depends how big an Adam Chashuv you are. But if you're a really serious Adam Chashuv, even if a person doesn't want to sell an item, you say, oh, I really like your car very much, but the person who's asking is like, you know, the President of the United States or something, so you're not going to want to turn him down, even if you really love this car very much and you didn't want to sell this car.
With the Super Bowl ring, right?
I don't know what happened with the Super Bowl ring.
He didn't give it back.
Oh, okay. Well, in fact, the... Right. It's interesting that the Aderet had a chumrah. The Aderet was the father-in-law of Rav Kook. So I heard from Rosh Shechter that the Aderet had a chumrah that he recorded somewhere where he would, if there were somebody had mishnayos and he wanted to buy the mishnayos, or he wanted, so he would make sure not to ask somebody to sell him the mishnayos, because he was afraid that the person would say, oh, well, you're the Aderet, so I'm just going to give it to you for free. And then he would feel like, you know, he had violated something. Or if the person didn't want to sell it, he would just sell it to the Aderet anyway. So he would only ask to borrow Sfarim. He would never ask to buy Sfarim. He would only ask to borrow Sfarim, figuring that borrowing is not going to be a violation of Lo Sachmon. You're even helping a person do a mitzvah. So it's not a problem of Lo Sachmon in such a circumstance. This leads to another question, which is there a violation of Lo Sachmon when it comes to a matano? Let's say that you didn't ask the person to sell you the item, because that's what the Rambam talks about, even though you're giving the person a lot of money and so forth, but you just ask the person to give you the item, and the person just decided on their own to give you a matana. So do we say that Lo Sachmon would apply outside of the context of Masamata? If you think about it, we have these gradations. If I take an item against from somebody against their will without paying money, that's gezeila. If I pay money, so we indicated from the Gemara that that's Lo Sachmon, that that's a violation of Lo Sachmon. The person didn't really want to sell it, he's just selling it because I gave him money. But what if I convince somebody to give me a matana? I didn't give him money. Is that, it's not gezela because he gave it to me willingly. Is it a violation of a lo sakmod when I didn't give money, or is it something in between? So the smag is of the opinion that this is a violation of lo sakmod. That even if you convince somebody to, maybe it's even a kal vachomer, right? That if you didn't give money, that's even, you know, less of a perfect transaction. I pressured somebody to give something b'matana, so it's like a kal vachomer, that certainly that's going to be a problem of lo sakmod. The Chafetz Chaim writes as well, that if you have, let's say, in-laws that are negotiating for a dowry, he writes this in his Sefer Mitzvot Sakotza when he talks about the violation of the prohibition of Lo Sakmot. So he says, let's say that you're pressuring your mechutan to give a certain amount of money to the young couple, and you say, oh, you're not giving enough, I want you to give more money. So he says that's a violation of Lo Sakmot if you're pressuring them to give money. So in the Sefer Bitzel HaChokma, which is written by Rabbi Tzalo Stern, who is a brother of a Moshe Stern, who is the Debrecina Rav. Rabbi Chokma lived in Australia. People don't know that my major Talmud Chokma in Australia, but he lived in Melbourne. He was a big Talmud Chokma. So he has a number of tshuvas on the subject of Lo Sakmod in his B'tzel HaChokma. And he devotes at least one of his tshuvas to the question of whether it can be violated by Matana. So he quotes this Chafetz Chaim, who says that would be a violation of Lo Sakmod. But it could be that maybe whenever you're negotiating like the dowry for a daughter or something like that, that's all part of the general transaction of marrying off your child, where everybody is contributing something to the pot, so it's kind of like a maso matan, it's a back and forth, so maybe it couldn't really be viewed as a matana, it's viewed as part of like the general sale transaction that's, we say, hey name, dharma, nickname, bamira, there is some sort of a kinyan going on, even with respect to giving money to the dowry, so that's not necessarily a raya that it's applicable to matana. He leaves it as kind of a suffix ladina, but he says that since it's dava shanei b'machlokes, yesh limnoa mizeh, that you should avoid convincing people to give you a matana either. The smag holds that for sure matana is included in lo sakmod. You're looking at me like this is a crazy discussion. That if you're giving money and it's lo sakmod, so if you don't give money, kal vachomer should be lo sakmod. So what would be the argument to say that there'd be no violation of lo sakmod if you didn't give over money? So the answer is explained that the Tzbetzel HaChokma explains, you can tell me the answer yourself. I've already given you all the information you need to answer the question. So go ahead, you can answer the question yourself. Who wants to take a crack at the answer? Why wouldn't there be Lo Sakmon in such a case? If you weren't prepared to go so far as to hand over money, so maybe you didn't have the requisite shear of a lo sakmod. Then maybe part of what would be the requisite shear would be that you go so far that you actually hand over money. That would be the explanation. So here too, we have an interesting. That would be why it's a question mark. The Maisa, whether you would violate lo sakmod under those circumstances. Interestingly,
can the other party be mochel at all?
That's the question. If the violation comes from your own actions,
really?
It's not coming from the other party's actions, because as we said, according to the Rambam anyway, we paskin presumably like the Rambam, the Shulchan Aruch seems to take the lashon straight from the Rambam in terms of how we paskin, even if there's nothing fundamentally wrong at the end of the day with the transaction, that's why the poskim say there's no lifnei iver component involved over here. Like, let's say I'm the seller. If I violated something by giving you the item, have I violated the lifnei iver? So the answer is no, because you've already violated your issa through your machshava. The transaction itself is not a davish alissa according to the Rambam. The transaction could be perfectly valid. It's the coveting that the person had which generated the issa. So I'm not responsible for the coveting that the person had. Oh, so the shear is reflected through the transaction. I'm not responsible for shear. I'm responsible. He's the person who had the thought process, so he's responsible for having the thought process. So my mechila doesn't doesn't count for anything, because my mechila is even when I'm comfortable with selling the item, the person has already violated the yisur. That would be pashtus.
So although it is a very
good question. It's a very good question. Yeah.
So anybody who is a collector, boy, I would like to get that stamp for my collection.
So you have to be
coin.
No,
any collector.
It's
wants
fine if you're not an adam chashuv, okay, and people are not just going to bow at every whim that you have, and a person would be comfortable saying no, and you're going to stop asking after the person says no, that would be all right. Now some say that you have to, in order to violate it, in order to violate the yisur, what is the sheer haftsara? In other words, how many times would you have to ask? You asked your question. You said, I really like to buy the house. The person said, no. You have to stop right then and there.
Yeah.
So the Betzel HaKachma in Simon Mem Gimel, he brings a raya from the Lashon of the Rambam. The Rambam says, V'hitzir alav reyim. He says, when have you violated Lo Sachmod? V'hitzir alav reyim, when you keep on hurling all of your friends and people of influence to talk to the potential purchaser and to convince him to eventually relent and sell you the property. So he says the hipster love rayim sounds like you haven't violated the issue after just one time.
Okay.
Sounds like there has to be a progression. So he says that we find elsewhere that a unit of times is three times. So he says that less than three times there wouldn't be a violation. Not clear whether you've made the violation when you hit the third time and when you hit the fourth time, but certainly says it's only one or two times, and you're not an Odom Chashuv, so then that would be okay. It's only when you've hit that three-time threshold that you have already trespassed the borders of decency, so to speak. And so too, with respect to Lo Sisaveh, your planning and scheming process would have to be, oh, even if the person continues to say they don't want to sell the item after one time, and even if they say after two times, I'm still going to continue to plow away at him, so only then have you violated Lo Sisaveh. So they kind of go together, except the Lo Sisaveh doesn't require the act to be completed, it just requires that lengthy scheming thought process, but it would require at least that many times. Now the Aruch HaShul, yes.
I'm curious. It's not in Dafin Choshen Mishpat, because even by Ishoi as well, it's the same thing. Bless Sabo Zachman, correct? So what about Shiduchim?
In Shiduchim, so we have the following interesting thing. See, the Lo Sachman Eishes Reyach is kind of in its own separate category, because it's not Masa Umatan per se, very difficult to talk about this. You're not going to ask anybody ever to sell you, their wife. You know, that is completely off limits, as the Ibn Ezra, spoke about. So clearly that's in a very different domain. But there may be one other very significant difference with respect to Ishto Shel Chaveiro, which obviously should not be in anybody's mindset. And that is, there's a Mechilta Derashbi that I jotted down over here. Mechilta Derashbi says something interesting, which goes counter to a Malbim, and asks the following question. What if it's not the specific item that I want, but I see that my friend has a really nice car, and I say, I want a car just like that one. Or my friend has a really nice watch, and I say, I want a watch just like that one. So is that a prohibition? Is that a violation? So the Malbim says that even with respect to that, a person is not supposed to be homemade. Oh, I wish that I had a house that was as gorgeous as my friend's house. I just went there for Shabbos lunch and I was so taken by the house. Oh, I wish I had a house like this. He says that also is considered to be a violation of low sachmon. Okay, even though
you're not
scheming to get his particular house. But the thing is, that appears to be against the Lashon on the Mechilta Derashbi. The Mechilta Derashbi agrees with your reaction. He says, Lo yako lo yomar, lavai enai ke'eno. Lavai sari kesaro. I might think that you're not even allowed to say, I wish that my eye was like as nice as his eye. I wish that my hair was as nice as his hair. Tamin lomar, sharo v'chamaro. Ma elu. Just like these things, Shomova, Chamarova, Moso, Veso, Sadeu, are things that could come into your possession, and if they come into your possession, then your friend will not have them anymore, because you're going to take this specific sada, this specific chamor, so too, any violation of Lo Sachman has to be that you want a specific item you're going to bring into your possession, and your friend won't have them anymore, as opposed to saying, I want a car just like that car. But there is a pasuk in Mishle, that says Lo Sachmon Yafya Bil Vavecha. It's in Perek Vav, pasuk Chopei of Mishle, where the pasuk indicates that when it comes to what a person's wife, you're not supposed to look at a person's wife. I heard this from my Rebbe Rav Shechter as well. Presumably it's based on this pasuk in Mishle. You're not supposed to say, oh, I want a wife who looks just like that woman. I want a wife who looks just like my friend's wife, because that's considered to be beyond your purview. That's already considered to be an inappropriate thought process of Lo Sachmon Eshes Re'echa, goes a step beyond what would be the mamonos aspects of Dvarim HaNiknim with respect to the other items. So this lives in its own domain. In this domain, you're not even allowed to think along those lines. Obviously, if a woman's not married, that's a different story. I mean, a single man could, you know, figure out how he's going to charm a particular woman who is mutter to him to marry. They speak about what if there is your husband and wife, and you want to marry off your children, and you have a son, and you look at a daughter that is she's the daughter of another couple, and you say, I really like that daughter for my son. But the parents don't really want to give their daughter to your son. Right. So is that a violation of Lo Sachmon if you figure out, well, I don't care if they don't want, this girl is perfect for my boy, and I'm going to figure out a way in which I would be able to get her for my boy. So that's an interesting question. It's discussed by the Poskim as well. Take a look at the Aruch HaShulchan on page 6, okay? In Sif Yud Aleph. So the Aruch HaShulchan says, O Darshu Mechilta, there are a lot of drashas on Lo Sachmon that don't appear in the Gemara that are in the Midrashim. Like I read the Mechilta Darash B. It says, O Darshu Mechilta Sham, Maha Purat Mefuish Mdarash Einu Bar Veshuscha Ela Vitsona Ba'alim, Akodarash Yevsha Lava Veshuscha Ela Vitsona Ba'alim. It's only relevant, Lo Sachmon is only relevant, if the only way you'd be able to receive this item is if the Ba'alim would transfer the item to you, okay? And we're talking about an item that's not off limits. Obviously, Lo Sachmon with an Eishes Ish, a totally different story. So says the Mechilta, you're allowed to be chomeid a particular couple's daughter for your son, a single daughter obviously, or their single son for your daughter. Obviously, if a person is single and they want to marry a particular girl who's available and muteris to him, the mutter, shreina eishes riecha, because she's not eishes riecha. Vala hasis avi abashi kadesh bito libno la siso shitzaris bino the kadesh bito. So I would have thought that to prevail upon a certain family to be willing to have their daughter date your son and so forth, haisiya, when they don't really want to, haisi omish shizeva klava koshil riecha, I would have thought that also belongs to them, that's koshil riecha, the banim abanash hem shalaviyam, because after all, don't the sons and daughters belong to the parents? Maybe not. The ishi kinyan baila, and also it's in the realm of kinyan, because the wife is the kinyan of her husband, technically speaking, in terms of kinyan kedushin. So lezeh miyata Torah. So for this, the Torah makes an exclusion, an exception. Neshazeh ain't sark das balin. Because in order for, let's say, a grown girl, a grown boy to get married, they don't need for their, they're not the chattel of their parents, that it's completely up to their parents to give them away. Because if the son wants, Romeo and Juliet here, if their son wants to marry the daughter of the other family, and the kiddushin will be perfectly fine, even if the father does not give the hand of his daughter in marriage. And so too, the daughter wants to get married, she doesn't really need the father. And you'll say, what if the daughter is below the age of 12? We're not talking about that type of case, right? Although sometimes the parents start thinking about these things when the children are really young, you know. Sheber Shusa up, Mikol Malkum, no, you could even start planning it out. You see a wonderful girl and she's only 11 years old, and technically the father could marry her off at his will at that point in time. But you're not thinking about your son marrying her now when she's 11. You're thinking of your son marrying her when she turns 18, 19, 20. Mikol Malkum Keshetisgadil, Eino Od Reshuso. At that point, she's not going to be in the father's domain anymore. Veino Domino Kakos to Metaltalin, and she's actually not like Karka and Metaltalin. She Olam Heim Reshus HaBa'alim, that are always going to be in the possession of the Ba'alim. So therefore, in this particular case, there really would be an exception. And, you know, the parents, if they think that a son of another couple is really good for their daughter or vice versa, so they would be allowed to engage in machinations, says the Aruch HaShulchan, without being in violation of
a Hosachmo. It doesn't apply.
Not applicable in this case, right.
Let's take a harder case. I go up to a woman and say, you're married, you're not happy with your husband, leave him, I'll make you happy. But I'm not going to any friends to hiftzer the reim. He said that that's a requirement for lo sachmod, to plan it with getting other people 2-3 times with other people involved. I'm not getting anybody else involved. I say to her, you're not happy where you are, divorce, get divorced, and I'll marry you, you'll be happier. So is that lo sachmod?
According to the Gemara in Gittin, so this is the type of thing, if you have machinations to bring a married woman into your possession, so that's what caused the Korban HaBayis. That's on a totally different plane.
But it's
beyond the contract, because the husband, it's not chattel. We don't believe in, spouse swapping or wife swapping, or there isn't that ability to give over a human being, even a spouse, bikinyan, to somebody else, that you're going to just sell a wife or something to that effect. So as I said, that exists in a totally different plane. That would be off limits. There's no thought process regarding that. The Eishes Riecha is in a different domain than all of the other elements of the Pasuk, as we saw with respect to other things as well, that you're not allowed to, might be allowed to say, I want a car like that car, but you're not allowed to say, I want a wife like that person's wife. I think as well, you know, best raya I have is the Gemara in Gittin Daf Nun Ches. But to me, it's just intuitive and obvious that it would be completely
something else.
That it would be a violation. It would be a violation of losachmon. Certainly, it would be a violation of losachmon.
We have the case we have with a teacher at a different school.
Los isav and los en losach.
How does this compare with the case as a teacher at another school, and I would want that teacher at my school?
That's a little bit different, because the school itself is not does not have the ability to is not the owner of the teacher. You know, that you would be going to. That's more a question of interference with the contract of Ani and Mahapik with Chavara. It's a different domain. It's not losachmon. It's not. I don't think it falls into this category, because losachmon requires that there to be an actual element of ownership. It's to be an actual element of ownership of a kinyan. So the last thing that I'll mention is that there's a Zohar that points out that with respect to most of the second set of luchos, there, which is a lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tiknav, lo sane, there is a psik between the lo and the next word to teach me that it's not absolute. Like lo tirtzach. Like, yeah, generally you can't, but every now and then go out on tirtzach. If you have somebody who's a chayef, you know, misas bezdin, so then the bezdin can administer capital punishment, go ahead and tirtzach, and it's applicable in other ways to the other commandments as well. But there's no psik with respect to lo sachmod. Lo sachmod, there are no exceptions to the rule, but says the Zohar. However, if you look at the realm of the cases that are described, so the cases do have one thing in common, which they're mile di alma. They're, you know, it's part of a person's regular existence. Person has gets married. A person buys a house. A person buys a donkey. They buy other possessions. So this is in the realm of a person's normal, mundane existence. Obviously, you elevate everything spiritually, especially, you know, a wife, obviously, but it's part of a person's regular, ordinary existence. So he says, however, when it comes to spiritual matters, it says the Zohar, lo sachmod doesn't apply. That when it comes to divrei Torah, so then you are allowed to covet. You can turn to look at a person who's a tremendous talmid chacham, and you could say, wow, I wanted to have that amount of chokhmah. I want to have, you know, that Torah. So you'll ask, wait a second, Why do I need the Zohar to teach me that? According to the Mechilta de Rashbi, I'm allowed anyway to say that I want, you know, my eye to be as nice as this person's eye. So, you know, what's the chiddush with respect to Torah? So maybe you'd have to come up with a different type of explanation. So you might say, well, I have the right to insist that the person teach that Torah to me. In other words, that normally I can't just take away a person's possessions and I can't pressure them when they say no. But if I say to somebody who I think is a good Rebbe, I want you to teach me Torah. And the Rebbe says, no, I don't want to teach you Torah. I don't have time. I'm busy. I don't like you. It doesn't matter. You can keep on pestering away. If you say Torah, he will limo don't need Torah. So that would be mutter in the realm of Torah. Problem with that explanation is that you look in the Aruch HaShulchan Sif Yud, and the Aruch HaShulchan says, well, we have a medrash that says that losakmo and mahaprat davashu kone amakne is something which is transferable. So to the violation only applies to things which are transferable. Bir adav nir third line shimuvein lamed eis a chokma veis a malacha v'shimon chaman b'libo chokma zu a malacha zu. And Shimon decided, I'm going to pester Reuven to teach me with this knowledge base that he has. B'shtadav v'hiber reyam a Reuven shalom the yisrael m'shigam zilbichal losakmo. L'zemiyata Torah says no. Taka davashu b'kin. It has to be something which is bikinyan, and lafuke chachma malacha enam bikinyanim. So it would seem even if it wasn't Torah, that would be mutter anyway. Comes along and told the Shmuel, says, okay, I'll come up with an explanation as to what the Zohar is getting at. The Zohar is getting at that the Torah is different in that, let's say that the person has a lulav or tefillin or tzitzis, that I want to be mekayim a mitzvah. He has like this pair of tefillin that I really want to be mekayim the mitzvah, so then I'm allowed to really pester him and to prevail upon him to transfer that mitzvah item, because that's really what the Zohar is getting. If it's a mitzvah item, so then I can really go after somebody very strenuously in order to receive the mitzvah item. Problem with that is that the Yushami connects the Lo Sachmod to the Pasuk in Kriya Shema on Uksavta Mamezuzos Beisecho Visharecha, indicating that even covering a person's mezuzah would be a violation of a Lo Sachmon. I don't need Dapke this per this mezuzah, I get a different mezuzah. So therefore, it's not so clear that this is what the Zohar is getting at either. So what then is exactly the Zohar getting at? So perhaps one explanation is the Pasuk Kina Sofim Tav B'Chokhmah, that normally you're not allowed to like have kina with respect to anything. That's sort of the underlying, you know, premise of, you know, the discussion of Lo Sachmon. But to have kina to say, wow, I'm so jealous that this person is such an amazing Torah scholar, if that is going to motivate you to similarly want to become a tremendous Torah scholar, so that's something, you know, which would presumably be permissible when it comes to Torah. Any kind of incentive or motivation you have to become a bigger Talmid Chacham is considered to be legitimate. I'll just conclude with the Ramban, who notes that if you look at the Aseret HaDibros, they all seem to connect to some sort of pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. So he says, which is the pasuk that connects to the commandment of Lo Sachmon? Anybody know which is the pasuk? Says the pasuk that connects to it is Ve'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. He says that if you really have, you know, a love of your fellow, so what does that mean? That you want the best possible things for your fellow. You want the best possible things for your fellow. You'll be very, very happy if your fellow has things even that are greater than the things that you have, and you're certainly not going to want it for yourself, because that'll be taking away from your fellow. That'll be a violation of Ve'avta L'Reicha Kamocha. We should all be zoche as we approach Shavuos to be mekayim Ve'avta L'Reicha Kamocha, to be mekayim, to be samecha b'chokeinu, and to have a true appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu by not coveting what other people have, and to appreciate that which we have been privileged to receive from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
Amazing. Thank you.